You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
ESO Pro Wrestling Roundtable. ESO Pro Wrestling Roundtable. Wrestling is awesome. If you buy a chair and bone on the ropes, rallying up the ladder. Stop the damn match.
1, 2, 3.
ESO Pro Wrestling Roundtable.
ESO
Pro Wrestling Roundtable.
ESO.
Oh, hell yeah.
Hey there, ghosts and ghouls and black cats and black bats. Here we are once again for the Pro Wrestling Roundtable special Halloween edition as we talk about the long, long history of horror and spookiness and Halloween and all those sorts of things as apply to wrestling. It's something that has been part of wrestling for almost the very beginning in some way or another, or certainly for many, many, many years, and still to this day. And we have a long and wonderful discussion about this. As always, I'm your host, John Morgan Neal, and Richard Ewell, our producer, and Jonathan Williams from WrestlingWithPulpCulture.com. And we're joined by our erstwhile and sometimes fourth wheel, Mr. Jerry Chandler, who not only is a huge wrestling fan, but like myself, a big horror fan, as Richard is, as Jonathan is. So see, this is perfect for us. We like it all. And we are joined by Trevor Eon, who is got a bit of a indie horror gimmick himself and is a fan of all this too. So sit back, give a listen, and don't get too scared.
There's a fair chance you don't like the news, and I get that. I'm Buzz Burbank, and I do a different kind of newscast I think you will like. I tell stories, true stories, because when you view it the right way, there's nothing more amazing than real life. I cover most of the stuff the big media outlets cover, but often with a different approach, richer in detail, and with a perspective that ties it all together so we have some idea of what it all means. I deliver stories that'll make you laugh, make you cry, and make you angry, because that is the nature of life, and because you cannot be a better citizen unless you understand and feel the news. I also don't cover some of the useless stories you'll find elsewhere, and do cover real stories the rest of the media somehow managed to avoid. With my nearly 40 years' experience in broadcast journalism and a love of writing, this is a news program that's custom-made for you. Buzz Burbank News and Comment is now a weekly show, new each Thursday, and available free on iTunes, SoundCloud, and several other platforms, and at buzzburbank.com. In addition to the other shows you enjoy here on the ESO Broadcast Network, thank you for adding me to your playlist as well.
All right, come on, everybody. We gotta go up to this house. We gotta go up to this house and do some trick-or-treating. Andre, are you ready? Randy Savage, my man, are you still with us?
Oh, yeah. I'm bringing up the train. It's the big caboose. You're the mother of all locomotives riding the lightning rails. Far up in the stratosphere. Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about, brother.
All right, you remember what to do, baby.
Yeah, brother.
Yes. Is it going to be a trick or is it going to be a treat? Oh, yeah.
Trick or treat. Oh my, what are you supposed to be?
Daddy, he's a scary Sasquatch.
I'm a scary Sasquatch.
Oh, and look at the little plumber.
Well, I'm just a common man, babies. A common man in these hard times. I thought I was going to come as the red-blooded sausage maker, but I didn't think anybody would get what I was doing.
Bet you can't guess who I am, brother. Okay, well, you look like Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
Wrong answer, brother. I'm actually Rip.
All the way from No Holds Barred, a really terrible movie, yeah.
And let me guess, you are the cowboy of the group.
I am the cowboy without a horse. I'm the coffee without the cup. Cream without the corn. Oh yeah, dig it, man. Freak out.
Well, here's your candy, boys. Have a safe night trick-or-treating.
Happy Halloween, yeah.
Happy Halloween, I'm a scary Sasquatch.
Happy Halloween, brother.
Daddy, happy Halloween!
Hey, cats, kittens. We're only talking about one thing tonight, and we're going to have a special guest and everything because it's almost Halloween. And if there's one thing, one of the things that wrestling has embraced over the years, it is horror and scary things and Halloween-y things and, of course, the late lamented Halloween Havoc, which is one of the greatest pay-per-views of all time. So, anyway, here we are, and we're going to discuss spooky scariness in wrestling and horror in wrestling. And we have a special guest, as always, our semi-regular Jerry Chandler over here, who's a horror aficionado. There's
freak. Course, horror freak.
Horror freak. And we also have a indie wrestler by the name of Trevor Eon, who has got a bit of a gimmick that fits with the theme here. And that's brought to us by Jonathan Williams of Pro Wrestling With. I am never going to get that right. Wrestling With Culture, which is a great name that I can't ever remember for some reason. Anyway, Jonathan's going to give a quick little interview so we get to know who he is, and then we'll go into the conversation. And as always, I am your host, John Neal. That over there, guy working the chains and the dungeon, is Richard Yule. And of course, I already said Jonathan. So start already, Jonathan.
All right. Well, when I found out we were doing a show about horror and wrestling, I was at the Women in Horror Film Festival a couple of weeks ago and met the Saska sisters, who have directed some underground horror movies and a couple of things for WWE, including See No Evil 2, starring King. And they are going to be on the show, but October is a very busy month for them, naturally, so they weren't able to join us for this show. So then I thought about my close personal friend Trevor Eon.
Eon.
And he's not wrestling a lot in Georgia anymore, but he's held some titles throughout the state. He wrestled for Monstrosity Championship Wrestling on a regular basis. And well, now I'm not really sure. I know you wrestle in New York a lot, so just tell people who you are, where you wrestle, if you have any championships at the moment, stuff like that, and why you are so interested in horror and wrestling.
Well, I'm Trevor Eon. I've been wrestling not so much. I've been hit in a beat a lot the past 2 months for some reason, but been hitting the up north state of North Carolina, Virginia, New York. I got New Jersey next month. I have Tennessee on Saturday, actually. And I'm trying to do more of that. I did Rhode Island about a month ago, trying to go back up there. I've done pretty much everything I wanted to do down here, with the exception of like doing more stuff in Florida. So getting up north is kind of one of my goals. I've been at that quite a bit. As far as a horror thing, I'm a giant goth, so I was already into horror and stuff when I was a kid, and it just kind of never went away. And initially, I didn't know how to like use it as far as wrestling goes, but every day, every week, more and more, it comes out of me a lot more now. So I'm just playing around with it, trying to be as spooky scary, ridiculous as I possibly can.
Cool. Well, yeah, that's about it as far as I can remember about you.
Yeah, I've only got a stranger.
Well, now I see you more at concerts and things, which are typically of a darker nature. So it seems like you're still the same guy that I used to see in the ring.
Yeah, that part hasn't changed. I've gotten better at it. I'm really sad that the sisters aren't here. I really think they should like her to be a serial killer.
How about telling us what your gimmick is? I mean, Jonathan knows, but you know, the rest of us do, and none of our audience. I wouldn't say it's a gimmick.
I think it's who he is.
Oh, well.
That's when it works best.
Yes.
He's not wrong. Essentially, I describe Trevor Eon as an eccentric madman. Kind of random, but at the same time, he's random, but at the same time, really, really calculated to a point. And I have like all these like dark and creepy things that I'm interested in real life that I injected into the character. So like Trevor lives in a clock tower that may or may not be haunted. He may be a serial killer. He may not. Will never admit. No one will ever actually directly say. He will never directly say. And I try to allude to him being more than, or I guess I should say me, but I always talk like it's a third person. Not doing it on purpose, but it's happening. always like little allusions to being more than what he is, more than he's die. Some people are like, oh, Trevor's kind of a vampire. And I'm like, maybe. Oh, Trevor's a demon. Well, maybe. Well, never gonna legitimately narrow it down, because I'm just gonna stop it at Trevor's fucking nuts. I curse. Sorry. Happened.
Well, that's great. So sounds like you're the guy that we need to have on the show. We have an interest in what we're going to discuss tonight. And so, therefore, let's move on into it then. So, horror and wrestling. I think we all enjoy that. And we all have our memories and so on and so forth. And I guess since we're good hosts, we'll let Trevor start. Trevor, got something you want to talk about, horror and wrestling?
I know we had like the Undertaker for the longest, and we kind of have like Bray Wyatt right now. And like I have some friends who are pulling off some really amazing horror style, super dark characters like Zombie Dragon, who literally shoots fire out of his hands. And I'd like to see more of that, or stuff like that. That might just be because of my taste, but
I'd love to see more horror stuff in wrestling. But yeah, even just on concept stuff, like when John was talking before, the late, you know, the Halloween Havoc. Of all the pay-per-views, why can't we have Halloween Havoc back?
Well, maybe we're close to that, since we now have somewhat versions of the War Games and
Starcade
coming back. So, in a way, so maybe we'll see something like that with NXT. You know,
yeah.
And Hell in a Cell is kind of Halloween. Ish,
more than any of the others, certainly.
Yeah,
yeah.
And the name alone, you know.
Yeah, I kind of feel like Hell in a Cell count.
It is. I mean, it would be better if they still had a little blood in it, but.
Well, honestly, it would be better if. I mean, Hell in the Cell I'd almost be willing to lose Hell in the Cell to some degree, because Hell in the Cell, in my mind, was built around The Undertaker. And even though so many other people have done it since then, it just seems, it doesn't seem right knowing that there's never going to be an Undertaker Hell in the Cell again.
I kind of see that. I agree with that. I know I'd probably, I mean, you could say that about the casket match or the body bag match or buried alive match and so on and so forth. Some of that's definitely, I mean, unless you get the right person, a buried alive match just isn't going to work for everybody. I guess it would work for Bray with the whole grave of Sister Abigail and everything. Nevertheless, I would agree with you 100% before this last Hell in a Cell. With what the heck they did with both of those Hell matches.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to lose that potential. Because that they really, really were fantastic. So, yeah. Well, I get your point, though.
Yeah, the concept of the match and the construction of, you know, a barrier on all sides, you can do that in other ways. Yeah. And, I mean, I don't actually want to see it go. I realize they've invested time in creating that name, and people like it, and they look forward to it. But, like I said, just for me, the fact that, you know, I associate the Hell in the Cell. If you say Hell in the Cell to me, 9 times out of 10, I'm going to be thinking of Undertaker or Kane, but primarily Undertaker is the first wrestler that's going to come to my mind. And no more Undertaker. It's kind of like, maybe they should tweak this a little bit. But
But I think certainly Mick Foley's the top of that list because he fell off the damn top of the thing. People do seem to remember that. I don't know why. Yeah. And went through it. Not only that, but he also went through it. So, and well, by God, that just terrified me. Every single bump they took on top of that because let's face it, folks, Kevin Owens is a heavy fella. And every single time he hit that, I was like, holy God, no, don't give way. Give way, don't give. But it didn't. But
I'm sure it was reinforced.
Oh, I'm certain it had to have been. And they also kept using that one panel, so they obviously reinforced that one panel. But, man, a lot. Created some tension there, folks, for sure. So,
I got a question for everybody with horror and wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things I always find funny, because when everybody talks about them getting more showmanship style to the wrestling, they talk about the late 70s and then certainly the 80s, and with occasional nods to Gorgeous George being before that. But as far as showmanship, how far back do you think truly embracing actual horror as a gimmick for a wrestler might go in its, once it became the scripted, the predetermined event?
Oh boy. That's a very good question.
I know, Kevin Sullivan was doing some pretty.
Yeah. Kevin, that's early 80s, very early 80s.
Yeah. That was actually even late 70s, I think, but I'm going to go even farther back than that. And unfortunately, it's hard to find the matches to see how the guy worked it in an actual match. But if you can find the promo photos they used, I'm probably going to get his last name a little wrong because I have difficulty figuring out which direction they're going with French names. Maurice Tillet, the French Angel.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The 1930s.
Yeah, that's right, that's right.
He was billed as the freak ogre of wrestling.
Yeah.
And he had acromegaly, the same thing that Andre had and that eventually killed him, the same thing that Paul White had, and he got the seizure to fix. Mm-hmm. But
is he the one that Shrek was sort of based on appearance-wise?
Yes.
Yes. It's
because his acromegaly was kind of a little weird. And it didn't cause all of his body to grow, but it was like his feet, his hands, and especially his head. He was almost a normal-sized person, but his head according to guys like Jim Ross in particular, he said they actually took a death mask of him, and some promoter actually had it. And Jim Ross and several other people have talked about they've seen the death mask. He was almost physical body-wise a normal-sized person. His feet and his hands were about as big as Andre's, and his head was bigger. And
I'm actually looking at pictures of him right now.
And he was bald. And anybody that's like a big horror fan, Rondo Hatton, who they even name an award now for, he almost resembles Rondo Hatton in the face.
Yeah.
And he was brought in. Wrestling was how much horror has helped wrestling. This is the 30s, the 40s. Wrestling is in a slump. And they brought him in, and they played up the horror angle and in the era of the Universal Monsters. And they bring him in, and they're running him through the NWA territories as this ogre and this monster and this creature. And they actually had him beating like the big NWA heroes of the day, like Dan O'Mahony and Billy Watson and other guys. His finish was a bear hug. So he'd grab you and crush you like the Frankenstein monster. But all the promotion around him that I can find and I've ever been able to find is they played him up like a horror movie creature. And it's if you can find stuff on him, it's amazing to see how they played him up. So horror, you know, we're talking about horror now, and I was pretty sure a lot of us are going to be talking about more modern stuff in our lifetime. But despite the fact that a lot of people really only think of the showbiz era of wrestling being like the last 40 years, they were working all out with this guy and doing basically the horror angle back in the 30s.
And that brings up another name, because this individual actually was billed as the super Swedish Angel. And that is Tor Johnson, who not only did sort of the monster angle as a wrestler, but then that led to Hollywood calling, and he did tons of B movies, including the infamous Ed Wood's, several Ed Wood's,
but Plan 9 from Outer Space.
His visage became incredibly well known to a lot of kids in the 70s whenever Don Post? Anyway, the guy who did all of the masks.
His mask
is one of the ones that, you know, everybody knew because it was sold so, you know, so fluently. And and he's also, you know, I mean, his connection to horror is even, you know, through the movies as well. So, yeah, Tor's an early one as well.
I can't believe I even forgot that. I totally forgot him when I was getting ready. And I want to hit myself now because I'm like, yeah, stupid. The guy that was actually in horror movies and
you know. A lot of people. It's kind of a surprise that Rondo never was a wrestler, you know. But
I can see him just physically not wanting to do it.
Probably, yeah. Not everybody's up to that. That's true. Also early on, anybody that knows anything about Memphis wrestling knows that Jerry Lawler, they had an unusual, arrangement, like they would trade off. Jerry Jarrett and Jerry Lawler would trade off the book, give each other a break from it, which is probably one of the reasons why their territory was so long-lasting, is that nobody got bumped out, and the same people were able to run it and do the things they knew worked in that territory for ages. So anyway, Jerry tended to have some pretty fantastic booking, and he used to love to bring in, he's a book fan and a horror fan, he would bring in actual monsters as temporary, attractions or whatever. Probably the most infamous one is when he was still a heel, and he introduced this new wrestler that he was going to bring in to help him out in the feud. And all he did was bring out a giant box. And, of course, Lance Russell and Dave Brown are all wondering what's in that box. And they're nervous because you see Jerry's surprise for Jerry's not a good thing. And so eventually he let it out, and it was the Frankenstein monster. He actually had the Frankenstein monster helping Jerry Lawler against, you know, who he was shooting against. And later on, Eddie Gilbert recreated that whole bit, because part of Eddie's gimmick was that he was an obsessed Jerry Lawler fan and he wanted to do everything Jerry did. And I can't remember what the monster was. Was it a mummy? I think it was a mummy. I'm not completely remembering that one, but anyway, he did the same thing basically, except for different monster.
Yes, and of course Jerry Lawler is one of the ones that picks on the Dungeon of Doom.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, see, that's one of the things I love about Jerry is that usually if Jerry is picking on something, it's definitely just it's an angle.
Because
he's usually going against something that he is guilty of.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, Memphis is where the hardcore come from. That's where the birth of hardcore was, with the Tupelo, particularly with the Tupelo concession stand brawl between Jerry Lawler, Bill Dundee, Honky Tonk Man at the time, Wayne Ferris, and his partner. And that became they kept recreating that, and then they kept inspired that to do other more wild, crazy stuff. And there was a Japanese wrestler there at the time of one of those, and he loved it so much, he took it and built an entire, you know, organization around it. It created the death matches and all this, that, and the other, which, of course, Terry Funk and Mick Foley and them all participated in, and then they carried that over, and then Eddie Gilbert, who, of course, was reared on Memphis wrestling as both a fan, a son of a wrestler, and then eventually a wrestler and Booker himself. He's the one that started ECW as Eastern Championship Wrestling. Yeah. So it all comes from Memphis.
Well, you go hardcore, and so that brings something into my head. Talking about horror and monsters, particularly when I was a kid watching wrestling, it was the human monsters that I was in awe of, and not just like huge guys. Like I've said before, you know, King Kong Bundy, which when I was really young was probably one of the few wrestlers that legit scared me when I saw him at a live event, because he was just so huge and he could play it so bad. But getting more into horror, and hardcore, you know, guys like Abdullah the Butcher, you would get these guys in and they would portray like the insane madmen who would do anything, or they used to do the exotic country. We've gone and we've gotten this one, and you'd have guys that they would play them up as kind of the cannibal or the wild man. And I mean, like Kamala, the Ugandan headhunter, who needed to be restrained. Yeah. So he wouldn't, you know, really hurt somebody. And I don't know if John might remember it. I don't know if anybody else, unless you've seen the videos later, when they introduced Kamala, and I can't remember if it was on TBS or if it was WWF, one of the programs, but they brought him out for a thing, and he had like feathers on his mouth and chest,
yep.
And it looked like he was eating a raw chicken that he just killed.
Yep. Yep. That was pretty much a standard thing. Of course, you know, that's another one that Jerry created. Jerry Lawler created Kamala. So that's just Jerry's thing. So, and then they filmed that vignette, you know, of him walking around in the jungle, but which was basically Jerry's backyard, and in the voiceover of Kamala, the Ugandan giant. All that video was used by Mid-South, by WCW, I mean World Class, and everywhere he went. So yeah, good stuff. You're very right, and I want to bring up somebody that I associate with sort of being the manager of monsters in a way, in the Gary Hart, who he managed Kabuki, who had definitely had this sort of, you know, mysterious orient you know, the makeup, the mist, you know, his face obscured by the long stringy hair. Well, long before the girl from Ringu or the Ring. and so, and then Abdullah the Butcher, who very much like Kamala is sort of just the barely restrained human monster from the Sudan. And Gary was the one that really set the template for how to present these guys, where he barely had control of them, and he was like, you know, pleading with everybody else just to let him handle it, because otherwise he's going to go crazy and we're not going to have a match, we're going to have a blood fest. And you know, and then he would do things like put the black towel over their head, and would be talking in their, you know, in their ear, and like, you know, and constantly holding on to them, and so on and so forth. And it's just the presentation of that was just so perfect. It's like, you know, Gary barely has control over these guys, you know. So, yeah, I like that. Richard, you're being too daggum quiet.
I'm just sitting back and listening to you old fogies talk about things that I have no idea what you're talking about. But I'm learning something, so.
Speaking of that, we got something to talk about later that's all about that.
Yeah, here. I understand.
We can bring young people in. We can go, because probably what was probably one of the biggest periods for horror gimmicks in American wrestling?
I mean, it had to be late 90s, right?
Yeah, probably late 90s when you had the Ministry, you know, the Undertaker, Kane, you had the Brood, Mankind. You had FMW going strong in Japan if you were a tape trader, and you literally had a character who was doing Leatherface from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre and a Japanese ghost called, I think, Onyo.
Yep.
I mean, even Sting, you know, I mean, that's a horror character. I mean, based on a horror character.
Yeah.
So I became a huge Sting fan just because he looks like the Crow. I fucking love that movie. And I was like, holy crap, he looks just like the Crow. That's pretty cool. That's awesome, even though he didn't really, like, he was still Sting. He just happened to look like him.
I feel like that had a lot to do with his popularity.
The transition from the blonde-haired, neon-colored face paint Sting to the dark
Sting. No color and black vultures and baseball bats.
And from him being so animated and yelling, and then he was just silent for however long.
It was
a good year. Yeah. Because he didn't wrestle that whole year because he was injured. That's why they came up. That was part of the reason of his gimmick.
Actually, around that same time, and Jerry already mentioned it in passing, but was the Three Faces of Fear and Dungeon of Doom, which I have, in a past show, have defended the Dungeon of Doom. I mean, anybody that loves horror and wrestling has got to love it a little bit. I mean, and how is it any different than a schlocky horror movie, you know? And the fact is that I've said then, and I'll say now, that the concept was fantastic. It was the execution of it that didn't go off well, and it was the fact that they're feuding with superhero Hulk, which was good on paper, but the way they just presented it, and when they had Hulk just sort of tear through the entire dungeon, you know, it ruined it. I think it was working okay at one time, and then of course, you know, some of those terrible, you know, little vignettes that was all Hulk. Hulk was horrible. That was, I mean,
it's
how
not
they ever
hot. Called,
yeah, it's like, yeah. I mean, how did Hogan ever get a movie career at all? I mean, it was terrible.
Well, have you seen his movies?
I have seen his movies, that's true.
It's yeah.
Like, how can you not know, man? Oh, he's a star, and I don't get anything away from him being like, maybe, certainly, then the argument of being the most famous and greatest wrestler of all time, but, man. So, yeah, that's what Kevin was having to deal with. If he had done that with some others, and also I think they brought in too many of them, but there was some good stuff there, and then, you know, he brought in his old mentor,
Sullivan.
Yeah, yes, indeed. Yes, my man. Who? That's the one who's had that sort of gimmick going way back, you know, who predated Sullivan. So, I mean, you have him, you know, and he actually kind of did stuff with Sullivan back in Florida as well. So, I just wish... anyway, so that's some good stuff, too. And we're talking about King Curtis IK is who we're talking about.
Talking about Dungeon of Doom, I have to talk about Ed Leslie, who was, you know, Zodiac gets a lot of crap, but I actually, it was his second best gimmick, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, with Booty Man, far from the best. But I can only hope that they make a action figure of him. I just sent Jonathan a picture. They just released a WrestleMania 9 version of Brutus in the upcoming WrestleMania series for, I think it'll be a Target exclusive or so. That'll be next year, and it looks awesome. So I think with Conrad over on the Bruce Pritchard Show, I think he's helped him get Brutus kind of back in popularity in a way. And I hope it's not as a joke. Like, I hope he's not seen as a joke. Of course he kind of is, but I mean, I hope we get more Brutus, but I actually like Zodiac. I mean, it was a silly gimmick, but I thought the look was cool. And I mean, the whole Dungeon of Doom, like you said, was a little cheesy in a way. I mean, it was a cheesy horror movie and, you know, WCW was never good at those segments, though. The movie quality stuff.
I don't know why, but they weren't very good at that. But I will say, I agree with you. Zodiac, I think, is the second best gimmick that he ever had. You know, not counting any gimmicks he might have had before WWF, because I've never seen them, which I'm pretty sure they were straight up, you know, just muscle guy or whatever, the Boulder Brothers or whatever. But I mean, once he became a star, that's probably the best one that he had in WCW. He had a lot of terrible gimmicks.
Oh gosh!
You know, is there anybody? And this is kind of off the subject, but that's certainly nothing new to us. Has there anybody been more hurt by losing his WWE gimmick than Brutus?
That isn't. Actually, an excellent question. By losing just a WWE gimmick?
Yeah, because, I mean...
Or a WCW gimmick.
He was only a star when he was the barber. He was never a star after that. But he was still the same guy.
Yeah.
So it had to have been just the loss of the gimmick, and people just didn't know who he really was.
Well, and he was called the Booty Man in one of his gimmicks. I mean,
I know.
Like they get in the Butcher, they gave him terrible, the Disciple. I mean, they gave him terrible gimmicks. Like, and
see, you know, here's what I would do, and only a good Popeye fan could have done this and known to do this. You can't call him Brutus, so we call him Bluto.
That should have been like John Tinta or Typhoon.
Bluto, the stylist, whatever.
He's actually a hedge trimmer now, though. He carries around the hedge trimmers, but he's a gardener now.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. That's funny.
Because he could still carry around the hedge trimmers.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know. I think you're probably right. I mean, I'd have to think about it longer. But I mean, yeah, he was never really a star. Never, and he had plenty of opportunities. I mean, they gave him. Plenty
oh my
of
God, coaches. He was Hogan's buddy.
Yep,
so certainly Hogan kept him work.
Yep.
He just couldn't get over, you know, like he did with Barber.
He was the disciple.
Oh. He was the disciple. He was a lot of things. And if that isn't a horror story, I don't know what is. So it's certainly, there you go. That ties into our. Okay, Jonathan, your turn. Come on, speak something. Say something. Talk about horror.
So does anybody remember the Yeti on Nitro?
I was trying to forget that part of the Dungeon of Doom, but.
Yeah, we weren't going to bring that up.
It's a 7 foot tall mummy, but we're going to call it the Yeti. And then when we take the bandages off, he's going to look like a Mortal Kombat character. Okay.
And then it just kind of didn't return, right?
Yeah. Unfortunately, it returned at least one more time than it needed to, when basically the Yeti in yellow scorpion Mortal Kombat outfit and the giant come out and basically group hump Hogan.
Yeah.
It's awful. It is weird. Who was the Yeti? Was it anybody?
Reese.
Ron Reese. Yeah.
Who was later part of the Flock, which was kind of a horror gimmick too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it was really the we're seeing a lot of like cult like stuff as far as Bray Wyatt, you know, and the Ministry we've seen, but the Flock was one of the earlier ones because it was actually an ECW. I mean, they weren't called the Flock, I don't think, but
were they called the Nest or something?
Raven's Nest.
Yeah.
I actually prefer like stuff like, as opposed, like I get it if you're like people are trying to be outrageous, you have to have like big crazy costumes and you want to be a mummy or Frankenstein or whatever. But I take Raven way more serious than I would a 7 foot dude as the mummy. Or I take Bray Wyatt way more serious than I would a dude who came out with face painted. And I don't think you need like all that to be scary. I just think you have to have a certain attitude about yourself, and you have to carry yourself a certain way to come across like I guess I prefer serial killers to monsters is really what it is. Because like a Raven or like a Bray Wyatt comes across to me like a cult leader who's probably gonna murder you and like leave your body in the woods. And I would prefer that as opposed to.
Kevin's the same way with that, and in a way, you can make that work. It works better if you have those like guys like that controlling the monsters. Because the monsters are useful. I mean, just like how Luke Harper and Rowan were good enforcers for him to sick on people because they were so big and powerful. Or the Flock for Raven, could just swarm somebody and so on and so forth. Or Kevin Sullivan with the purple haze and everything. So it works for that type of character to have their cult, followers. As a matter of fact, I think one of the things that they've messed up on with Bray is not only getting rid of the family, but not expanding the family. They did it when they expanded out to Braun. That was great.
The Wyatt family should have grown like out of control to the point where heels and faces were like teaming up to face these guys because they were that big of a problem.
Exactly.
That's what I wanted to happen.
Exactly. And the thing is that I've talked about Bray. This podcast is the official mourning place for Bray Wyatt. We all love Bray, and we all just are so disappointed and so disgusted with the way that things went. I think it was you, Jerry, that we both came. Yeah, I know, because you wrote about it in Needless Things, where we both copped to this way that they could fix him. Just reveal, and actually they kind of did that with the feud with Finn Balor, where Finn basically said in the middle of the ring that Bray Wyatt doesn't care about winning or losing. And that's what I said. You announced to the audience, this guy doesn't care if he loses, so you shouldn't care if he loses. He's got other bigger plans. He's got ways of wanting to get into people's heads, and he's wanting to do his sinister motives, which we're not entirely sure what are. And then we start revealing, little bits and things, but everybody he's had a contact with starts having a little bit of something that's not quite right with them, and he's affected some kind of control over them. And you could, when Bray was still in SmackDown, how cool would it have been if Daniel Bryan started favoring Bray Wyatt in his decisions?
Yeah.
Because he used to be part of the cult.
Yeah,
and he's not entirely aware of it. So anyway, go ahead, Trevor.
Oh no, I was just agreeing with you.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. That's okay. that's. Go ahead, whoever that was.
Yeah, it was me. I just, before we got too far ahead, I wanted to get off track again. And since you mentioned Luke and Eric Rowan, I just wondered what everybody's thoughts were. This is coming out a few weeks later, but they did everybody see them on SmackDown this past week?
The Bludgeon Brothers?
Yes.
So they weren't in the ring or anything, but they did a promo. And
with
Eric,
Thor's hammer,
with two Thor's hammers, and so you got Eric Rowan and Luke Harper, who we knew was coming back as a, we thought he was going to be revamped a little bit, but it seems that he's not. But yeah, I mean, I don't think the name is as terrible as some people think it is, but I feel like the whole gimmick is a War Machine from Ring of Honor, and now they might be in the NXT or going to NXT now. But I feel like they felt like War Machine in a way, like the way they dressed, the medieval look, just, it was, I don't know, I'm not sure how I feel about it.
I don't know. It can very easily go very wrong very quickly.
Luke Harper should be a single star, and he is an amazing talent that they don't know what to do with, apparently.
Luke is really, really great. I mean,
and
truly
the crowd loves great. Him.
Yeah, they do. I mean, they could do so much with him, but I'm not sure, you know. They dropped the ball there right before WrestleMania last year. So, yep. But I don't know. I mean, Eric Rowan's good too. So I'm happy that he's not being thrown under the bus either. I hope that they were able to pull this off. I hate the name. I think it's this ridiculous name, but they've been, you know, it's kind of one of those curses. Cause I used to hate the fact that they stopped naming tag teams. And now that they are, I kind of wish that they weren't. So
I kind of feel that if they reversed it, if they called them the Brothers Bludgeoned, it might work a little better.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, I appreciate the fact that they actually named them in a way, but they could have come up with something better.
So you're saying this is your fault?
I am saying this is my fault.
You asked for this.
Yeah. I asked for this and I got it, yes.
It's hard to...
They team them up and they're called the Bludgeon Brothers?
Yes.
Yes. Yep. Yes.
And they carry big hammers.
They've got huge, like, medieval Thor hammers.
Yeah.
And very medieval-looking hoodie type,
yes,
you know, clothing and stuff.
Eric Rowan still has... He doesn't have a sheep mask anymore, but he's got, like, this weird gas mask that looks like a sheep, sort of.
Yeah. And like I said, I like Eric. I really do. But there's such a difference between Luke and Eric as far as... Luke has something. He's got a presence. It's just he is not only just his ability in the ring, which is magnificent, but he's just got a presence. He's got a...
Backing up a second, and going back to for a second the mastermind or the serial killer type of, you know, almost the Manson type of character in wrestling who creates a cult or just has that. That's one of the things when they started running Rowan as a face, I was like, okay, I can like this, but honestly, he's smart. He's got charisma. They don't want him to do a gimmick that's too close to Bray Wyatt. But getting back into horror with him for a moment, I mean, this is a guy who, when he's playing kind of the dark and crazy, he doesn't need a cult, but you could almost run him as kind of an unpredictable Manson type of template. You know how when you've seen interviews with Manson in jail and he like snaps back his moods, you know, he's like, he's deadly serious. Then he's goofy. Then he's threatening you and you don't know what he's going to do. He could play that. He could pull that type of character off and not even fully as a heel, not as a face, just that's it. Whoever gets in his way, you're dealing with this charismatic, insane person, and you don't know what he's going to do. And, you know, going with what was said earlier about, you know, liking the human monsters so much, you know, I love the human monsters, and I think the only reason we don't see more of them is because you don't have as many guys like Rowan who could probably pull that off. And the problem with Bray, I loved what was going on, what he was doing with Finn, and they were playing, trying to do what mind games. But the problem with really making Bray do that with some guys that as I'm looking over their roster is you're going to have someone who's almost as good at figuring that out as Bray. It's not a one-man dance unless you just want him torturing the guy.
Yeah.
And
that's actually why he's one of, like, Bray Wyatt's one, obviously. Like, Bray Wyatt's one of my dream feuds because I have the kind of character that he can affect and they can play with each other. And somewhere in there, someone has to, like, one of the things that bothers me about his feuds is that when people feud with him, they don't come out different. They come out the same. You're like, oh, yeah, I feud with Bray Wyatt, now I'm the same guy. Okay, that's cool. But
yeah,
he's supposed to affect people.
Yeah, that's our complaint, is that everything, the way they've booked him, he's completely ineffectual. I mean, is he spooky and interesting, promos? He does these spooky effects. He has the ability to apparently, you know, teleport, but none of it matters because he never wins. He never has an effect, and it just all resets for the next thing.
And it's what I had said about Bray in the thing I wrote and what I think I've said on the podcast as well, which is, and again, it plays into what we're talking about, the horror. Bray should be a special event character. He should not be someone that we're seeing every week when they've got nothing for him to do. But when they bring him out, it should be that kind of thing. You're going to change someone. Bray is this insane character, and I don't care if I beat you. I don't care about the belt. I want to see if I can break you. I want to see if I can take you to hell and leave you as nothing. And see if you can come out the other side. And you could use that. Somebody's leaving and you want to write him out, you use him for that. If you've got a guy who's kind of like they did with Mankind, you had Triple H. Hunter Hearst Helmsley becomes Triple H, but he still wasn't really being seen as maybe that level serious. And they put him in the feud with Mankind. And they went through hellish, bloody, brutal matches. And a lot of people saw Triple H as a different wrestler after that.
Yeah, that's the kind of more. Stuff that he needs.
Yeah.
He needs to do like that kind of stuff to people. Like just thinking about different things that he could do with certain people, maybe a guy needs a character change. Maybe he's going to turn heel, or maybe he's not going to turn heel. Maybe he just needs to change, and a character like a Bray Wyatt is the vehicle for that person to be able to change. And, yeah, he can still be champion and stuff too, but, like, him being champion isn't just like a, oh, yay, this guy won the title. It's like a big special event because now he's, like, ruining people's lives. As champion.
And I agree.
Some guy finally stands up to him and is like, oh, you're not going to change me. I'm going to whatever. But then that guy still has to change because he had to go too far to beat this crazy dude who won't leave him alone.
And it's worse because if you give him the belt and you run him like Lesnar, he's not there every week. It's like, you want the belt. It's on my terms. And these are the terms. And it's that dragging the character through hell type of scenario.
Mm-hmm.
It's that insane, like the crazy Manson or, you know, Henry portrait of a serial killer, human monster that just you don't want to be around.
And speaking of that, I'm going to reel this back over to the past a little bit again, and so Richard will be lost again. But there is a very human monster that wreaked havoc all through the territories back in the late 70s, and actually his career went being back further than that. He used to be part of a tag team that was legendary. But anyway, this guy, the way they presented him and the way he come across was that he was a very dangerous, dangerous, dangerous person, and that it had the fans worry about their heroes going against him. I mean, they certainly believed in their heroes, but this guy was different. This guy's, you know, unsettled. This guy is crazy. And so on and so forth. And that's Joe LaDuke, the mad lumberjack. He kind of invented the rambling crazy interviews. You know,
whereas Lance Russell,
this Lance Russell, you know, or somebody would interview him, and of course he'd just come off as unhinged. You know, even as a good guy, he come off as unhinged, because he certainly had his face runs, but he didn't change. He was still Joe LaDuke, and he was crazy. And probably the most infamous thing that he ever did on television was when he cut himself with his axe right there on television while he's talking to Lance Russell. You know, I mean, literally right there. It wasn't gimmicked. He cut himself with his freaking axe. So again, he was really crazy. So it really wasn't a gimmick. So, so Joe LaDuke is definitely somebody I wanted to mention in this, because he was great.
Well, there's a lot of people that we haven't mentioned yet, which kind of goes back to somebody said earlier, basically anytime there was a foreign or exotic challenger to the territory hero or whatever, it was basically presented as kind of a horror or a monster gimmick. And there's so many. Bruiser Brody is a good example. The Missing Link, the Great Muta, you know, anything like that, anything with some kind of mystique around it.
Yeah.
It was basically a horror gimmick.
And Muta's really embraced more of the horror as he's gotten old along in his career.
Yeah, he's a lot scarier now. Like, even the mask that he wears is a lot creepier looking now than it ever was before. I love it.
Yeah, he's that.
Of course, I do.
I saw some of his recent stuff when I hadn't seen him for a while, and then I found some of his recent stuff online, and I'm looking, and for half a second I'm like, "Well, where's Muta?" And then I realized that's Muta, and I'm like, "That's freaking cool! Why can't he come back here and do that for a little bit?"
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah.
Have you seen the Mexican wrestler Drago?
Yeah.
He was in TNA recently. I don't know if he still is, but he looks great. But the problem I have with him is he looks so crazy and scary, but then whenever he doesn't seem to intimidate his opponents, it's just like, oh, here's another guy in a mask.
That's my problem with I hate to go back to Bray Wyatt, but I mean, I want more people to react to Bray Wyatt. I want them to. This guy's creepy, and they're actually afraid of him. That's the reason why they need to turn him face, so that they can have somebody afraid of him. They can have Miz be afraid of him, and they can have Bo Dallas be afraid of him. You know,
that's a good point, actually. That's actually a really good point.
Yeah. So anyway, go ahead, John. I'm sorry.
I don't know. I don't know if I was going anywhere with any of that. just thinking of things that haven't been mentioned.
That actually is a problem. But mm-hmm. What you brought up, that actually is a problem, not just with Bray Wyatt, with some of the recent attempts at horror in wrestling, is that you don't – I mean, it didn't matter if you were a heel or if you were a face. When The Undertaker was at his darkest,
mm-hmm.
You know, people reacted – it was like, you know, some of the most stalwart, I'm the face and I'm going to be, you know, I'm full of confidence. And you had The Undertaker do his entrance, and whoever it was that was in the ring had the brains to sell that as a concept.
Yeah. That,
okay. And Kane too. I remember several years back. On SmackDown, I believe it was, John Cena was the champion and Kane was announced as a potential contender or something. And he, you know, visibly like gulped and looked afraid. Yeah.
When Mankind did it, and even, you know, as goofy as he could get sometimes during the heyday of Hulkamania in the 80s, when they brought in the right kind of monster, at least in some of the run-up, you know, Hulk would not only sell it, but you'd get things like, you know, King Kong Bundy, half putting him on the shelf in the lead-up to the big matches and the big events.
Oh, yeah, no less, probably the greatest was Andre. But other monsters, yeah, Hogan sold it, and he had a great job of doing it, because what he would do is that he would give the impression that, you know, I know I'm strong and I know that I'll do my big fight, but this guy, he's like this and he's this big and he's this, and it says, I need y'all's help, Hulkamaniacs, I need y'all's help, you know.
And it's one of the things when he would do that, or others would do that, or you saw Finn Balor doing it with Bray, even when he was trying to do the bravado, suddenly he's doing something and there's the Bray Wyatt promo and they cut back to Finn and he looks unnerved. And it's like a lot of guys don't seem to realize, if the entire time you're treating it like, yeah, okay, then you haven't done anything when you succeeded.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to sell, this is a monster, I don't know if I can deal with this, and I've got to overcome it. And there, if you don't have somebody doing that, it doesn't matter what kind of monster you have. It doesn't matter how much you dip into the realm of horror. If the person that your horror character is dancing with isn't going to sell the horror, you might as well be having the guy dress up like Daffy Duck.
Yeah, because if he just treats you like just another wrestler, then the audience is going to pretty much react the same way, which kind of defeats the entire purpose of going out of your way to develop this amazing multi-dimensional character just for some guy to be like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to wrestle this guy, whatever. Like, I deal with it on the indie scene, too. So,
sure.
I purposely try to, like, one of the things I always try to sell with Trevor is that Trevor's willing to go too far, even if he doesn't necessarily have to. So because of that, in order to beat him, even if your opponent is like cookie cutter, I'm a good guy, I just want to have a nice clean match, well, that's cool, but this is the wrong guy to go into a match talking about you want to have a nice clean match. This dude is going to seriously try to mess you up. Like, and unless you can find that in yourself, he's going to kill you. Get over it. But if they don't, yeah, if they just react to like, oh, I'm just having a wrestling match, okay, well, that kind of defeats the purpose. Luckily for me, I've found ways to inject that into my matches now too, so that even if I do a promo and the other guy doesn't, I'm like, that's cool, you don't have to. We gonna get this story across whether you want it to happen or not.
Well, I'm going to take it back to Memphis for a bit, because I remembered another one. Like I said, you guys, just any horror fan should definitely watch as much Memphis wrestling as they can, because Jerry brought him in over the years. I mean, and he even started before him. His manager, infamous manager Sam Bass, who died tragically young, he brought in the Mummy, then Jerry brought in Mr. Frank, it was Frankenstein Monster, they brought in Mummies, they brought in Leatherface, they brought in Darth Vader, they brought in just all kinds of different ones, Freddy, which the fans came to be calling Freddy Gilbert, because it was actually Doug Gilbert under the Freddy stuff. But perhaps the one, and really the one who had the most legs, as it were, the one that actually has wrestled as recently as 2011, but has been played by so many different people, but played by one particular individual who went on to greater fame, who borrowed from the same source as what many consider the greatest tag team of all time, the Road Warriors, is Lord Humongous. Who debuted in 1984 in Memphis and has been played by no less than 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 wrestlers.
You said six or said?
Well, Sid Vicious, of course, did play him in between 1987 and 1989.
Psycho Sid.
Yes.
Another horror gimmick.
Yeah, that's true. That was before he became Psycho Sid, but that's probably the origins of it. But yes, Sid's first big run in wrestling was as Lord Humongous for 2 years down in the South, in Memphis. And that really, I think, is what got him the attention. And then he went on to become Sid Vicious in WCW and then on the WWE and so on and so forth. And actually, just as a little side note, his son played Lord Humongous in 2009. So I'm not really sure where, but he did.
I don't know if anybody remembers, like, the Ascension when they were in FCW.
Oh, God.
Oh, right, yes.
At the beginning of NXT. I loved them just because I was like, I don't know what this is, and I don't care. It's amazing. And, I mean, like, I wanted to be a part of that. I'm like, yeah, can y'all just add me to this? Like,
That is another thing that WWE completely ruined, but with the way they brought them up, and they would say such a great gimmick, have a great look, they do a great job. The only thing that saved them now is that I'm loving the comedy stuff they're doing with Breezango. But
yeah, those guys are hilarious. But yeah, that's another thing for like a Bray Wyatt. He comes in. Maybe he talks to them a few times. He doesn't have to wrestle them unless he has like a tag partner or something. Or maybe he wrestles them one-on-one, you know, piece by piece, and they both lose to him. And they're like, oh, he's right. Like, he like destroyed them. Maybe he destroys the crap out of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they come back as that Ascension before with the music and the lights and everything. They're like, ah, he made us better. Or he made us snap out of whatever we were in and made us like whatever the hell we were doing before.
Or just even a subtle thing where he kind of have you have these is a little quiet. You'll see vignettes of them talking in the background, but you don't see what they're talking about in the shadows, yeah, in the back, and so on and so forth. And then the next time they come out and have a tag team, he's there with them in their corner, and they start winning, and not only winning but winning dominantly, you know. And it's very clear that the effect of Bray being with them and helping them has made them better, and it brought them back to what they were before. And that's another thing. You do bring back that more of that stuff that they were doing in FCW and NXT, and it becomes creepier and weirder, and they just are an unstoppable force.
Weren't there originally three of them?
There used to be four of them, actually.
Well, yeah, but yes, there was a whole faction. And then they came down to two guys, and then one of the guys got released because of some drug problems or some kind of...
Yeah.
And then they replaced him. But Connor's been with it all of the versions.
So did they ever feud with the Wyatts?
No, because they were both heels. So
yeah, I don't think they ever even actually crossed paths.
No. Not even during that tag team tournament. I think they were both in the tournament, but they didn't face each other because, of course, they both faced face teams all throughout.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I just can't talk about it because I'll start crying.
Me too.
That really was. I loved them so much, and they were one of I've said a number of times before, I am a bigger fan of tag teams than single wrestling. And they were one of my favorite things for a while in NXT. And then they came up and and I wanted to beat the holy hell out of oh great, JBL? I just blanked on his name.
JBL?
Yes, thank you, JBL. I wanted to beat the holy hell out of JBL that night when they debuted. And then I just wanted to beat the hell out of Creative.
Yeah, they're not football players, you big Texas moron, and I'm from Texas, so I can say it. They're not Royers. They're not. We're not trying to be the Road Warriors. And so, yeah, they ruined them from the get-go. But you know what? I have to give this. Now the Ascension have made me turn on Breezango.
Oh,
how mean they are to the Ascension. And all they want to do is be their friends. Poor Connor. A big sad face and that big old ugly face. Made me sad. But anyway, go ahead.
Does anybody know who portrayed Lord Humongous in the Road Warrior, the movie?
Oh, it's an Australian guy, yeah, pretty sure, yeah. But I'm not sure. Off the top of my head.
I don't even know if it was an Australian wrestler.
I don't know. So. I really don't know.
How about some of the people we haven't talked about, like Abyss? I remember.
Yeah, I love Abyss.
At first, I didn't like Abyss because I just thought he was a Mankind and Kane ripoff, which he is in a lot of ways. But he did it so well, and did the hardcore stuff, and then even when his career started mirroring Kane's career to an extent with the unmasked goofy character and then the masked monster. It's which they're still doing currently.
Yeah, Joseph Park.
Yeah.
I love it. I think he's great as both.
Yeah, he does a great job with either one, but has also done some crazy stuff that I think a lot of people get and maybe never saw because it was in TNA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I was
because the original Abyss, when he looked like an escape mental patient and he had jeans and shirt. I don't know. I thought it was the coolest thing ever. Like him and AJ were going at it. Like they had some amazing freaking matches too. I was like, this is great.
And then when he was with Father James Mitchell,
I was going to mention that's the guy we need to mention. Great manager, the great gimmick. Yeah, James Mitchell is fantastic. Yeah, and he definitely, him and that to me was the greatest run for Abyss because he had the perfect manager for him, the perfect gimmick for both of them. Really loved that stuff.
Well, I know a lot of people didn't like the wrestler who portrayed him, but I love the Judas Messias storyline. I don't know if y'all remember that, but
I
loved the look of the character, and I didn't mind the wrestler.
No, I didn't.
It's just the way they portrayed him. They needed a bigger guy.
Yeah, I was expecting him to come out like towering over Abyss, and like being. I expected the Undertaker Kane thing with him, and if he was gonna be smaller than Abyss, then he needed to be way more sinister and way more like. He needs to be better than Abyss in, like, every way if he was going to be smaller than him. So that, you're bigger than me, but I'm smarter, and I'm faster, and I'm way scarier, and I'm way more dangerous, despite the fact that you're still stronger than me. It doesn't do you any good.
Well, a perfect example of something like that was when Mankind feuded against Undertaker.
Yeah.
You know, Undertaker had been so dominant, and then here comes this, you know, crazy guy. He's not as big, not as in shape or any of that, but he gives Undertaker the roughest time than anybody had in years. And
it just worked.
Totally crazier. And, you know, and also if we mention Mankind and we've mentioned Kane, we mentioned Undertaker, let's not forget Paul Bearer, who was also a part of that initial beginning of Mankind. So, yeah, and that definitely helped the whole situation, you know, yes. You believe that Paul Bearer would find a person that could give the Undertaker troubles like Kane did before. Yeah.
And he would know since he was with him all the time.
Yeah. Right. And you know what, we were talking the psychology of some of the horror characters before, and that bringing up Mankind and looking back at psychology, that's one of the things. The really good horror characters, unless it's like a really great visual impression, the thing with the horror characters that stick with me the most are the ones where they've got like a lot more to the psych, which is probably why I like Bray Wyatt so much. There's so much to the psychology, and when you look at what they went through, if you've seen Mick Foley talk about building Mankind, you know, it was going to be Mankind the Mutilator or something like that, or then the Mutilator, and then this, and it's like, well, why don't we call him, you know, Mankind, and there was, Mick Foley was already thinking that stuff out as, you know, well, we can call him Mankind. So when he's talking, you don't know if he's talking about, you know, himself
or
Mankind, everybody right. else. And there's all of this as he's getting into the mind of the character. I mean, from day one, he was building so many different layers into the psychology of this character. So that even when it decides, okay, we're going to take the mask off and you're going to be Mick Foley, and he's still doing Mankind and rocking back and forth, and he's still the scarred, this is what you all have driven me this, and the pain and the suffering and all of that. I wanted to be different, but you still had it. And it's, for me, it's one of the reasons that Mankind, you got Undertaker, Kane, Mankind, and then they had like maybe a dozen other characters that they tried to do with horror, and they might have looked cool at the time, but unless I really think about it, I can't remember some of them because they didn't have that ability to really become this character that could really get into your head, you know?
I'm going to bring one. It's funny that that segues perfectly, and we can round this off with this. Because there was a group of people around that time that people do remember, and people lament that they only had a short run, or shorter than we really wanted it to be, and it could have been so much more, but for whatever reason they did cut up the lugs off of it and they messed around with it. But and outside of the Undertaker, who has a cooler entrance for a horror wrestler than the Brood?
The Brood.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Gangrel was very underrated, I feel.
Yeah, and of course he's still wrestling as Gangrel, still doing his gimmick. So
I just wrestled him like a month ago.
Awesome, cool. That's awesome.
Yeah,
yeah, and of course Luna Fashan, his ex-wife, who's also definitely great horror tinged character. So, the Brood was so cool, and of course they've just sort of brought back their Bud Bath thing in this feud with Finn and Bray. I don't think. Go ahead.
And you mentioned Luna Vashon real quick for anybody out there. One of the unsung horror teams of women's wrestling, the Daughters of Darkness. Which if you can find them, find YouTube videos. It was almost a female Road Warriors, but a little weirder.
Well,
Luna and Locke.
Well, man, we barely scratched the surface as always.
We'll definitely do this again next year, though.
Yeah, we have to. It's just too much good stuff. I'm going to close out by going back to Memphis once more and point out that there was no limit to what Jerry Lawler would do with this gimmick. He actually had a feud with Satan. With a big, Satan, evil, devil thing that was a fad. He actually had a program with the devil.
And then
his possession of his, demonic possession of his wife or girlfriend or whatever it was at the time.
And then later down the road, his boss had a feud with God.
That's true. So Vince became the devil. So
wasn't Vince always the devil? I keep reading online.
Exactly. So there you go, folks. Horror and wrestling. Get a chance. Just look up some of the stuff on the YouTube if you've never seen it, or on the network, of course, that you can get for $9.99.
And Trevor.
Yes.
Trevor. I'm curious from the things you said. So where can I find you online?
Yeah, it's a good idea. Yeah.
You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter as Trevor Eon. Trevor is spelled T-R-E-V-E-R. Everybody thinks it's Trevor, but my name is actually Trevor. My Eon is spelled A-E-O-N as opposed to E-O-N. But So far, I'm definitely the only one. So Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Trevor Eon, TreverEaon. You can type it in as one word. Super easy to find. I'm weird looking. Weird videos.
Hey, Trevor, you need to. Trevor, you. you need to either tag team with, former tag team with, or feud with Zema Ion.
I'd be down with that.
Eon and Ion.
Done the show with him, actually.
Eon and Ion. Completely different gimmicks, grant you, but
that's okay. We'll find a way to make it so that he's like the upbeat one, and I'm upbeat in a completely different way. He's like, you can't get excited about this evil thing. So I'm like, hey, look.
Well, anyway, thank you, Trevor. Thank you, Jerry. Thank you, Jonathan and Richard, as always. Thank you all out there for listening. And chime in. Give us know what your favorite horror angles or horror situations in wrestling are. And for now, we're going to sign off. And everybody have a happy Halloween. And thank you for listening, as always. Good night.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.